Welcome to Being Mom, a podcast about modern motherhood. I'm your host, Ali Kozel. This is where we have honest conversations about the mind-blowing transition to motherhood, nurturing our families, and the beautiful roller coaster ride of being a mom. I'm so glad you're here. Hello, and welcome back to the show. We are now 1 week away from the major winter holidays. So I hope you are finding ways to enjoy the season. I know that some people find it easy to find enjoyment during the holidays and other people don't as much. So if you struggle sometimes during the holidays, I want you to know that you are not alone. I certainly have had times in my life where the holidays just didn't feel super joyful. And one of the things that guides me during the holidays is the idea that all the major winter traditions are all about finding and celebrating the light during the darkest weeks of the year. And so that's a main driver and inspiration for me during the holiday season. And I find simple ways to do it. So I pull out extra candles and I light them more often just so that light is more present in my home. I do light and playful things with my family. You know, one of the things we do is we allow our son to stay up way later on weekend nights. We drink hot cocoa and we watch, you know, fun movies. We also eventually take one night and we wear our pajamas and we get in the car and we drive around the neighborhood to see all the lights of the homes that really do like wild over the top decorations. And we find that really fun. And they, you know, they're bringing the light, they're creating extra light in the neighborhood. And so we enjoy that. Just simple ways of engaging in it. And so I hope that you find some way to embrace the light as we move into the holidays and into the first part of next year. So I am so pleased to welcome my next guest to the show. Her name is Anjua Maximo, and she and I met many years ago as sensual movement teachers in Los Angeles. And when we connected for our conversation, we hadn't seen each other in about 10 years. So it was really fun to reconnect. Anjua now lives in Cleveland, Ohio with her husband, Zosimo, and their two sons who are 8 and 14 years old. And as an FYI, in this conversation, she refers to her 8-year-old as tiny human and her 14-year-old as bigger human, which is really cute. In addition to being a mom, Anjua is a successful entrepreneur and life coach dedicated to empowering women. In 2015, she and her husband opened Groove Ride, which is now Cleveland's premier boutique micro gym. And they now have 2 studio locations in the Cleveland area. She also created a weekend immersion for women called Pure Movement, which involves her unique combination of both personal development and sensual movement together. So with all of that, you can imagine that Anjua stays incredibly busy. And she shared her compassionate perspective on finding balance between work and family, which we'll get to later in the show. But first, of course, we talked about how her family grew to what it is today. You know, having boys who are 6 years apart and just the incredible humor that she finds when she talks about motherhood. So Anjua is very funny and she's fierce, she's straight talking, and you can really feel her incredible positivity that was particularly present even during a rather challenging second pregnancy. So here we go, introducing Anjua. I want to start by you just telling, because I actually don't know if I recall the story of you becoming a mom.
Oh, yeah, that, so you know what? We were married for 5 years before we were ready.
Okay.
And yeah, it was really, it's one of those things where I just remember it was like 5 years of we're partying, Vegas, you know what I mean?
Oh, I do.
Vacation, Caribbean, like whatever we want. And we were really enjoying that. And even mm-hmm. though like our families were pressing for it, we were just like, not yet, not yet. And then finally, you know, I don't remember what exactly was the defining moment, but I just was like, I'm ready now to bring somebody else into the picture. And so,
yeah.
And we got pregnant really quickly. I remember that
you
too.
Did.
Yeah. It was kind of like, oh, faster than I thought, because I was on the pill and the doctor's like, oh, it could take a year. And I was like, okay, cool. We have time. And then it was like, nope. Done. Yeah.
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 That happened with us too. We kind of at our year anniversary thought, oh, well, we'll just, you know, we'll stop preventing it. It'll take a while. Right. And then it was like, bam.
Yeah. Oh. Exactly yeah. what it was like. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And did you, so if you waited that long, was there a discussion about it or you just waited until sort of the call of procreation came
yeah,
or something?
I don't know. I feel like it was almost like a simultaneous, you know, I mean, we love kids, you know, and he's always like all over all my little cousins. And he was, you know, when my best friend had her first child, like we took her for a weekend and she was like two or three and she totally was insane little wild child, but he had like the best time with her. So it was like, you felt it coming, like, you know, and I think it was just like I don't even think it was a discussion. It was just like, yeah, you want to just kind of start? And he was like, yeah. Okay.
That's awesome.
He was like, we could bring the baby to Vegas. I was like, yeah, we could. We did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it works sometimes.
You got a baby in Vegas. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And were you living in LA when you first had your first son?
Yeah. He was born in LA. Yeah. Yeah. That was crazy. Cause we were in Encino and we went to Cedars.
Oh, okay.
Oh. And it was a little bit of a drive. Yeah.
That is a little bit of a drive.
Yeah.
So anybody who doesn't know, Encino is in the valley of Los Angeles. And so you actually have to go over the hill and then down into Hollywood area.
Yep. We ran into a funeral procession on the highway.
Wow.
It was a lot going on.
There was a lot going on. And how was your first birthing experience?
So again, really, I think that moment is so surreal. So first of all, the whole being pregnant to me, and I hope, you know, whatever, this is just the truth of it. It's very sci-fi to me.
Oh.
It was like sci-fi, you know, like I understood now where all these ideas came from that we saw in the movies, because I'm like, there's a hand pushing through my skin, you know, and it's communicating with me and watch this, we'll play drums with each other. That's weird.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there was another being inside of you, you know?
Totally.
So I think when like the labor actually started, I remember we were like, I was with my mother because she was coming in because she knew it was about that time. He actually was away shooting a commercial in Florida. And it was like all these lineup of things. There was an impending hurricane coming. So he's like, you know.
In Florida?
In Florida, right?
Okay.
And this was, you know, and we knew that it was maybe about a couple of weeks off, but I had just gone to the doctor and I remember her saying, you're way more dilated than you should be at this point. So that means there's a possibility that the baby could be coming a lot sooner than we anticipated.
And that was before 40 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. So like maybe I would say maybe 37, you know? So, and it was, you know, I had been like, she was like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I've just been like living life, walking stairs. I don't know, just doing stuff. And so we're out and I remember we were like taking the dog to the vet and I'm with my mom and I'm like, we're going to go pay an AT&T bill or whatever. And all of a sudden I'm like, I think I feel things. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, I think the thing that she's talking about, I'm feeling those things. She's like labor? I'm like, yeah. And I was like, let's go pay your bill. She's like, are you fucking crazy? No, we're going home. We're not going to pay the bill. And so I get home and she calls him. And he did make it home. I do remember this now because she was like, tell him to come home. Tell him he can't wait. He has to come home because if he gets stuck at the hurricane, the baby could come at any point. So that's right. He did make it home. So we get home and my mom was like in this panic. And I was just not. I was like, I want to eat rice. And I remember sitting down on the couch and I'm like, I'm hungry. And I heard they're not going to feed me. And I want to eat rice.
That's a real thing though. Like
yes.
I remember hearing that too, that you just brought that up. Like this idea of like, once you get to the hospital, they won't let you eat anything.
Nothing. They're like, they're going to give you ice chips and you're going to be so hungry. And I was just like, that's a horrible thing. You know, I'm a pregnant woman. I've experienced hunger. I'm like, I'm not going to do this. And yeah. So I sat down and they were both looking at me and they fed me rice. They're like, are you happy? Like waiting by the door. And we got there and I remember, this is really funny. My doctor was like, listen, I don't know why, but when you get there, they may turn you away if you do not look convincing enough that you are in labor.
Oh.
So I was like, really? And she's like, yeah, and I know you're an actor. So she was like, yeah, you have to, like, if you're in labor and you know it's coming, like, I need you to even more. And she just didn't say more than that. So next thing I know, like I get there and it was like, I was like, oh, like really actually playing it up much more because it wasn't that bad. Like I could feel it, but I was like, they're like, don't worry, sweetheart. We'll get you going. Right. And I get up there and here's what's crazy. I get there. I'm in like the waiting area.
Yeah.
And there's like a lady walking around. I think she was a midwife and she's supposed to be checking people. And so she like checks me, but she breaks my water.
Oh.
Accidentally. I don't know. And so now she's like, oh, well, now we're really going to start rolling. I'm like, wait, what? She's like, you had some time, but now it's on.
You're like, thank you so much.
Yeah. And then she was like, oh my gosh. And then the pain got really intense. And she's like, here's what you're going to do. Stick your arm in the air. And I want you to make circles. And I was like, why? And she's like, it'll take your mind down the pain. Circles in the air. It was so bananas. So then like, they're like, well, can you walk? I'm like, are you crazy? At this point, it's really like serious. And they're like, the doctor's not here yet. And I'm like, well, oh my God, like, where is she? And I'm in the room and they start sending in like people who I thought were children, but apparently they were doctors too. They looked so young. And I was like, oh my God. And they were so pretty. I was like, you're like on ER. What's going on? Like, it was so weird. I was like, this is not a set. And then the epidural guy came in because I was scheduled for one. And they're like, she's crowning. And he's like, see you later. And I was like, no. And so he left.
Oh.
So I didn't get anything.
Yeah.
And I have to say the worst part was watching my mother almost faint in the corner because she'd never witnessed this.
And I was, because she just...
It was a lot. She'd never seen anything like this happen live. And she was just like, didn't look good. And I was like, doc, please check on her. My doctor did end up coming in like right in time to catch him.
Oh, good.
But the Ring of Fire was probably the worst part.
Yeah.
So it was one of those things where like, it was really intense. It was very like fucking primal. You know what I mean? Like your whole body, you feel like working, but it wasn't as crazy. And I hate to say this just because I don't want to sound like, an, I don't know. It just wasn't as crazy as I thought it was going to be. It was almost like that movie that people hype up. They were like, oh my God, when you go, it's going to be just the scariest thing you've ever, oh my God. And this and that. And then you go and you were like, I jumped a few times. So it wasn't that scary.
Right. You know, it's almost like because you were set up for it to be so extreme.
Or maybe I get a high pain threshold. I don't know.
You might.
I think the afterbirth was worse. Like what your body is doing to heal and repair itself to me was much more painful. You know, your swollen giant ass vagina, your, you know, the huge pads you're being sent home with, the fact that sitting on the toilet is like hell.
Yes.
Peeing is hell, you know. If I tore a little bit, so
you did.
Yeah, I tore. She didn't believe in cutting, but she's like, if you tear, you're going to tear naturally and we'll sew it back up. Don't worry. So I did tear. That sucked. You know what I mean?
Right.
But, and just like how tired and wrecked your body felt after that to me was harder than the actual labor itself.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it seems like it was actually relatively quick then.
It was like in an hour and a half.
Wow.
From the time, like we got to the house and like even the doctor was like, okay, so your second one's probably going to just fall out on the lawn. So I really need you to be much more cognizant of your labor pains. Okay. Stop like brushing them off, lady.
Right. So you probably do have a high pain threshold.
It was something like, she's like, you have been having contractions. I'm like,
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I want rice.
I'm just concerned about what I'm going to eat. Yes.
I was so stressed about that. I just remember that so clearly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so here was the arrival of your son and your husband was there.
Yes.
And so what was that like for you the first time seeing it? Did they give him to you right away? Because
they did. They did. He was fine. You know, they did whatever they got to do, suck the stuff out of his face or something. And then they like put him on my chest right away. And she tried to get him to latch on right out the gate. And he kind of did. That whole scenario was just a nightmare, though. That also was probably the hardest part, was just
trying breastfeeding.
No, it was awful. It was awful.
Yeah.
But that moment was just amazing. It was magic. You know, my mother's face after she calmed down, was breathing again, had been resuscitated.
Right.
You know, my husband, obviously, like, just seeing his face, like, it was just, it was a beautiful, beautiful moment. And again, that moment, you're like, oh my God, I pushed this thing out of me.
Yeah.
And it's like a real person that you've now, again, sci-fi. I'm like, we replicated something. It's so weird.
Yeah.
It was that. It's like, it's magical and weird and beautiful and just, yeah, it's all
I feel
things.
Like it's so true. It feels like so many things as a mom are like a both and. It's both magical and totally fucked up at the same time.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's perfect way to put it. It's like you can't. You know, I think any one way to look at it to just be like, oh, it's just all magic. I'm like, yes, it is. But there's just so much reality to the shit show that it can be, too.
Yeah. And they don't prepare you for that. Like we all see like the diaper commercials where everything's calm and working well. And
right.
I'm so calmly, beautifully changing the diaper. But that's just not.
Oh my God, no, they real. Don't show you. They don't show you in the bathroom of like a Thai restaurant and you've got your baby on the floor in the bathroom because there's no changing tables.
Yes.
And he's pissing in the air.
Okay. Oh, well, wish, with the boys.
I wish
with
they
the,
would do yes. a commercial.
Oh they need God. That commercial though, right? Because it's like, I feel like we would all feel more prepared if that
oh
commercial
Oh my God,
were.
With the explosion up the back, like show me that. Show me the lady wrangling that or the dad wrangling that and he doesn't have a changing table.
Right.
And mom didn't pack any change of clothes because I did that. And then my baby was in the restaurant naked.
One diaper. And yep. I think I pretty much did that too, because you don't know that you're going to throw away a onesie, because it's just like you take it out and you're like, you know what? We're just going to let this one go.
Oh my God. What am I putting? Can I get a bag for this? No, I'm not putting it in my car. It's staying behind.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to stuff that at the bottom of the trash.
And I just think it's like, as a mom too, those are just the things as a parent, and I'm not speaking for both, but right now for me, it's just, you just forget things. And in the beginning, I think those are the things, like, there's so many first times where you're like, shit, I'm boarding a plane and you've got no nipples. You know what I mean? Or like, you know, and you're running around. And I actually asked a woman, I remember so clearly asking this woman who looked like she had a small child, because I saw a stroller and I ran over. I'm like, I will pay you if you have an extra nipple in your bag. And she's like, well, he's 4.
Oh,
I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't notice.
Right.
Oh my God. Too many stories like that. You know, you're just not prepared, but you make it work.
But it sounds like, you know, this is unique, actually. I don't know if you know that or not, but it sounds like even with, you know, a newborn or an infant, that you were going about doing things.
Oh, yeah.
That's so great.
Yeah. I mean, I think definitely in the beginning, those first couple of weeks, maybe even a month, because I feel like time just is like runs all together when you're out of the hospital and you're not sleeping and everything. It actually wasn't great after the magic moment. I actually thought that he didn't like me. I really did.
What gave you that impression? Like he just
screamed every time I was holding him. You know, my mom held him, he'd get quiet. So he'd often go sleep with her out on the couch on her chest. And then if my husband picked him up and started talking to him, he'd get quiet. But like he would cry and scream. Ugh. So it seemed when I had him. And I seemed to be the only one that was getting pissed on in the face, you know, all kinds of things. And your mind is like so crazy at that point and you're so tired. And I couldn't feed him because my breasts were not producing enough milk. But I had like this woman who was part of like, you know, one of those milk society, whatever, you know, breastfeeding support groups. And she was just adamant. She was committed that I was going to breastfeed. So she had me like rigged up, like with like formula, like coming out of my shoulder, like it was wrapped to my shoulder, you know what I mean? And they put a cord and they tape it to your breast and they try to get it close to the nipple, that whole thing. And it just wasn't working. So that whole first, I think, few months was super stressful. And then he jaundiced because he, you know, I don't know if it was like related to why he wasn't, and that's probably why he was crying so much also.
Yeah, we had that too. We had the jaundice.
Yeah. And he was hungry and, you know, he wasn't eating. So it was all these things and just feeling super disappointed that I couldn't breastfeed the way I had wanted to, the way I had envisioned.
Yes.
You know, obviously you go through the feelings of like, I failed. Absolutely. You know, that part of that you wanted so badly to do, now you can't do. So dealing with that and then switching him to formula was fine because I wanted him to eat. Obviously, that was the most important thing to me. And he was fine and it, you know, and it got better after that. But those first, I feel like it was the first 2 months was pretty rough. Like my husband took my mother and my mom out and like, I think they went to see like the Price is Right or something. And so they were like gone all day. And it was like the first day I had been with the baby all day by myself. And by the time they got back, like I was a mess, like crying. I was like, please take him. Like, I can't, like, I'm not good at this right now. Yeah. It was rough.
Yeah.
It was rough.
Yeah. It's just amazing how many moms I talk to who had that deep, almost guilt around the breastfeeding. And I'm hoping that now, because that was still a thing when my son was born, I'm hoping now that that's relaxing a little bit, that the pressure and the intensity of the message that if your child doesn't get breast milk, they won't be smart. You know, like stuff like that. It was so intense.
Yes.
Yeah. So I hope that's shifting.
I don't know. I mean, but the thing is that I think it was just in conversation with other moms, you know. Oh, well, you know, your son's, you know, poop smells a certain way because he's having formula and not breast milk. And if he was breast milk fed, his poop would smell better or something like that, you know, or, you know, your son is, you know, experiencing this, you know, because he was not breast milk fed. And that'd be like another mom. And she's like not trying to be rude about it. But in your mind, you're still like taking that in as, oh, well, you see, it would have been this much better if you could have done that for him.
Right. But now, it's almost unintentional mom shaming.
100%, you know, and I did, like I said, I don't think it was necessarily like someone deliberately trying to, but they would always like to point out that it was because of the difference in how they were being fed. And I was like, okay, got it. Yeah. Got it. Yeah. Yeah.
And so how long were you in LA with, because I don't think you had your second son in Los Angeles.
No. We were in LA for about 5 years after he was born. Mm-hmm. And then we left 2010 and we moved to Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, shortly after. It was like very, again, it was just a lot of going on. Like my dad had passed. He got very ill again. He passes. I get pregnant unexpectedly though this time.
So like, it was a surprise.
Yeah, because even after like the first child, like we waited another 5 years because I honestly wasn't convinced we needed a second child. I was an only child. So I'm like, I'm okay, you know, we're okay. And he came from a family of four siblings, but you know, and he kind of wanted one, but was also like, I'll be okay with one too. And then, you know, you get the pressure that, oh, he needs a sibling and it'll be easier with two, which, you know, we all know is not necessarily true at all.
Yeah.
And then like we go ahead and we actually do get pregnant and it was kind of unexpected. I had a new job with Lululemon, or a new role with Lululemon, and, you know, my dad had passed and it was just like a lot. I was in a new city, a lot going on. And actually that pregnancy was much crazier because he was preemie. Yeah, he was a premature baby. And I actually was put on bed rest at 25 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
In the hospital. Yeah.
Because he was had a low weight or something? What was the reason for the bed rest?
You know, I went in for a routine checkup. Actually, that's not true. I was at work and my plug passed at 25 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And I started not looking good and feeling good. And one of my coworkers was like, you literally have lost all the color in your face. I need you to call your doctor now. And I call and they're like, we need you to come in right away. So I drove myself there. And as soon as he checks me, like you could just see him like panic, like his face just blanches and he's like, hold on. And he goes and he gets another colleague and they start discussing stuff. And I'm like, what's going on? And they're like, okay, so you are dilating almost like, I don't know how many centimeters it was, but he was like, the baby could birth now. Basically, you go into labor at any moment. And so they were discussing whether or not, you know, they had to sew me up. Everything happened in one afternoon.
Yeah. What did that feel like to hear all of this? Because it's like so unexpected.
I was terrified. I thought, oh my God, you know, am I going to lose this baby? Like, I can't believe this because everyone's like, you need to go to the hospital and, you know, until the baby's born. And I'm like, well, I'm 25 weeks like that. You want me to lay in the hospital for 40 weeks? And he was like, you're going to have to. I'm like, can I go home on bed rest? Like, no, you need to be monitored 100%. Like, wow. And you need to be in Trendelenburg where they head down, feet up. So they had my bed tilted. But yeah, they rushed me to the hospital. That was like the last time I actually saw the outside for 4 to 5 weeks.
Whoa.
Yeah, I was put in. And then the worst part was that my son at the time, mm-hmm. who's five, mm-hmm. he saw me the first day. And then the next day they put down the flu order. So no children under 12 were allowed in the hospital. So the only way for me to see him was via, we didn't have FaceTime, but you right. know, it was like some video thing, video chat. And so that was really difficult. And then he saw me for like an ultrasound here and there when they could get him down. They got him to that floor mm-hmm. or to the other side of the wing. But it was really rough in that regard, not being able to see him. So I was in the hospital for almost 4 weeks. And my mother came in from New York again.
Oh, she did.
And stayed. Yeah. And she came to help and she would come. So Zosima would drop her off, my mother, during the day. Mm-hmm. Take this, my son to school, drop my mother off. She'd spend the whole day with me in the hospital. Then he'd come back. He'd pick her up, get them dinner, send them home. Then he'd come back and he'd hang out with me until about 11 or 12.
Wow.
And then he would go back home. Yeah. So it was
that's
crazy.
Like huge interruption.
Unexpected.
And so when was he then born?
29 weeks.
29 weeks.
And he was 29 weeks. He was 2 pounds, 15 ounces.
Wow.
But again, like the whole time I was there, my doctor was a bit of a Debbie Downer. Like that was just his demeanor. Mm-hmm. Like he just kind of was always like the worst kind of face. So I actually for the whole 4 weeks was cheering him up and constantly being like, doc, it's going to be okay. Like I really need you to calm down. And like they, you know, when they came in with these books on like preparing you for what your preemie baby is going to look like and what you're going to possibly face and his, you know, the difficulties, like the books were terrifying.
I imagine.
So I thanked them and I was like, I'm not going to read these though, because really, honestly, it's almost like on the plane where they try to prepare you for the crash by telling you what to do. And you know, the time of the crash, you're not going to fucking remember anything.
No.
So I was like, you know what? I'm honestly, if this is what happens, then I will be prepared when he comes, let me assess the situation and I'll decide when to read those books.
Good for you.
Because I just felt like energetically, it was going to F me up. So I stayed very positive actually during that whole entire experience.
That's great.
And it was as horrible as it was to be away from my family. I learned how to knit. I finished the entire Law and Order series. Like I just, you know, I did like a lot of, you know what I mean? I read like 6 books, like things that I never, you know, had time to do.
Right.
So I actually like, I took the best advantage I could. I got Reiki done.
Yeah.
I was, I was really just trying to be in the moment to grow this baby mm-hmm. And not let any kind of negativity come in there and mess it up, including my sad doctor. So, yes. You know, so anyway, he came and he was 29 weeks. And here's what's crazy is then they started denying me that I was correct on my date. Because they were like, he's way too advanced looking for 29 weeks. I'm like, I don't know what you want me to tell you. Like, I know when the hell I had sex.
Right.
I'm very clear on this. Like, and they're like, well, he just like, they were expecting his translucent skin. They were expecting so many things. He was on oxygen for a short period of time mm-hmm. and then was able to come off of it. It was still very scary being in the NICU all that time.
I bet.
It was scary because there were other babies that were not doing well.
Mm.
And that was heartbreaking. And I felt for those mothers. And I also felt for the babies whose mothers and dads couldn't be there because they had to work or they lived too far.
Yes.
So there were a lot of babies that didn't have people coming
yes.
to see them regularly. And I was there like every day with an every single day.
Yeah.
Until, you know, I'd go home, I'd spend some time with my other son, and then I'd come back again with Zoss, and we'd stay until like 1 o'clock in the morning, and then we'd leave again and come back first thing in the morning.
Wow. And so was your older son allowed to come into the NICU, or do they not allow that?
No, he couldn't come into NICU. And you know, what's weird is that it could be the age difference. And I think primarily that's what it is. But I always wonder too, if this whole situation kind of he was never like super excited mm-hmm. to see his little brother, you know? And I don't know if it was like an associated thing with like the trauma of not having me around, or he just didn't like the way he smelled genuinely, but he was just like, from the moment I brought him home, he's like, ew, you know? And he's like, why is he noisy? He smells. I don't like the way he smells. He just kept saying that over and over again. There's like a picture of him holding him for the first time. He literally is like, like, get this thing out of my arms. Yeah. So it was, you know, he was fine once we got him home. He's been healthy ever since. He's hit milestones.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's been, it's very, very, very like lucky situation.
Yeah. That's great. And how are they now, their relationship now that they're both a little older?
Yeah. Still the same.
They sort of like could take each other or leave each other.
Yeah. Yeah. Like little tiny human definitely looks up to bigger human. Mm-hmm. But bigger human is just like, you literally are like, annoying, and why are you so loud, and you know,
yeah,
trying to actually like contradict his arguments. I'm like, he's 8, could you just go along with it, please?
Right.
Like, just, I know that's not plausible, but guess what, just entertain him, please.
Right.
You know, so I have to remind him to be kind and patient with him. So I'm hoping when they get older, like in their 20s, you know, that it'll just kind of be like not such a big deal, that gap.
Yeah.
But right now it's definitely like he's 8 to 14. So
yeah. It's a big difference.
And my big boy's also got like very, he's just that, he is incredibly warm, but he can also be a bit like brainy about things. So it's like, he's super literal and he's just going to like outfact you kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I just think like, you know, the little one's kind of zaniness is like just irritating.
So they're really different then, their personalities.
Oh, yeah. They're very different. Very different. Yeah, very much so. And that's been interesting too. Again, I'm an only child, so I have no reference for, you know, why people are fighting over fresh air. So it seems to me, it's just like, what's happening, you know?
Yeah.
Can't figure this out. So that's been a big thing for me to kind of like learn when to step back and not interfere in their arguments and let them work it out, but also when to intervene and be like, okay, like you're older and he's obviously not understanding what you mean. And I need you to be kindly explaining to him what it is instead of trying to make him feel stupid, you know, that kind of thing. But it's, you know, gosh. And then the little one just asking, you know, I think he often sometimes feels alone because he feels like an only child because he doesn't technically have a sibling to play with. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm just like, come on, guys.
Yeah.
Like, give me something, you know, like I see those other brothers, like they're like hugging their little brothers. I'm like,
I know.
I want that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, it's not going to happen, but get over it.
Right. Right. Anjua has an incredible willingness to embrace the messiness that comes with the territory of being both a mom and a many-sided entrepreneur. Her honesty about it and her ability to exercise compassion inside of it is quite inspiring. I asked Anjua to share one of her biggest challenges as a mom, and her answer led us into a bigger conversation about finding grace for herself, her partner, and her kids.
You know, being the disciplinarian is not fun.
No, it's not.
It really isn't. Do you have this dynamic, or have you witnessed this dynamic? Are you like the disciplinarian, or are you fun mom?
You know, I feel like the challenge for me is that I flip back and forth.
Right.
So sometimes I'm like easygoing fun mom, and then probably my son is like, what just happened? Because then all of a sudden I'll be like, man, I'll come in and try to be the disciplinarian. I imagine it's confusing for him.
Right. And I feel like I'm very much that way.
Mm.
But I also feel like in our relationship with my husband, that he's more so fun dad 24/7. So then it's like, I feel the pressure to be the disciplinarian.
Yeah.
The
structure. You're giving the structure.
Yes. Right. Exactly. And then it's like, you know, they're like annoyed with you because you're not fun mom now. Now you're the one who's like, no, you've got to go to bed now. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Yeah, I get that you and dad had it like a deal worked out, but dad didn't realize what was happening tomorrow. And now you've got to go to bed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That kind of thing. I am getting a lot more support though from Zoss in that department, and which has been great. And because I think he realized too, the smallest one is very savvy. And he's a bit of a hustler, and he was starting to know which parent to go to, yes, or to deliberately like walk away and ask the other parent when he didn't get the answer he wanted.
Oh yeah. We've
the first parent.
You we've know had a little bit of that trying, and we've don't made the mistakes of not talking to each other and making sure that we yes were backing the other one up. And then right so much resentment about that happens. And
oh
then,
my God.
Yeah. But we've tried to really,
I didn't know.
I had to really train myself to go, well, what did Dad say? You know, because right I would just come in and be like, oh, and like make the decision because, you know, like I make decisions all day long. I can do it.
But, totally.
Yeah.
I do the same thing and then come to find, he's like, I didn't know you had said that. I'm like, well, you, I guess, why would you know? I should have told you to.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It takes so much grace to,
oh my God,
you know, parent in partnership.
It really, it honestly, it does. And that's been like a huge learning for us too. Because definitely, I think we had like different styles,
mm-hmm,
you know, growing up, different styles of moms. And me also trying to work with what I knew and then, you know, take some of the good stuff that my mom definitely created, some structure and what have you, but then kind of also soften some of those edges because she was very, 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 very like hardcore,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
disciplinarian. She was fun and she was great and she allowed me a lot of freedom in some sense, but there was also just a very strictness in how she spoke and, you know, and the yelling and kind of stuff like that. And those were things that I tried to work on and not use so much, you know, so it's like they're not frightened of me so much as they actually respect what it is that I'm saying.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and he had a mom, I think that she was a little bit more easygoing with him. You know, so there was a lot of like tension when I would kind of come into discipline and, you know, he'd kind of feel like the need to protect. And I'm like, don't do that. Like, they're fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
I know it's scary for you because you didn't see a mom that kind of, but sometimes they need to hear it like, I'm going to come for their ass if they don't get it together.
Right. You know, right.
Like they got to hear it. Sometimes.
Yeah. Well, because then they listen.
Well, they get it going. Yeah. They listen. Sometimes it does take that voice has to come out,
mm-hmm,
for them to know I'm not playing, like, let's go. And it, yes, it drops and it gets a little bit scary and it's like, oh shit.
Yeah.
And like, get up.
Yeah.
And they go.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And on the flip side, what has been the most, I'll use the word magical about being a mom for you? What's been your, or like, what feels good about it?
My gosh. You know, I love when, I mean, obviously when they're babies, it's just delicious, right? I love the cuddles and the sucking on your face and just how much they could just stare at you for hours, right? I mean, there's all that and just all that is just magic, the way they nuzzle right in. Mm. And then watching them kind of become people and like having, you could see their, you know, their brains turning on and things that are magical to them and seeing the world through their eyes. Like that is just amazing. I love, yeah, all of those moments. The moments when they accomplish the silliest things or the biggest things, like walking, like, and just the recognition on their face. Awesome. I think for me now though, I'm really enjoying, because my 14-year-old is old enough for me to now really like have discussions about things with, you know, and that's just a really fun thing to relate to him on art or movies.
And oh yeah.
Books, you know, and things like that. Like he's taking German. So we go to do a lot of the things that he's assigned to do, like go to the German beer fest.
And yeah. Like,
you know, and go to, you know, whatever festival and they're in their lederhosen and pretzels and it's just so fun.
Yeah.
And then we walk in and it's just like, you know, and it's, you know, it's pretty fun. And with my youngest, I think it's just really exciting to see him develop because he's very much the comedian.
Oh.
And I think what's neat is when you start to see your half and your husband's half kind of appearing,
yeah,
and formulating this whole new person.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And
I,
you're
do,
like, oh my gosh, that's so-and-so's walk, or like even seeing your parents in them. Like, I'm like, oh my God, that's my mother's expression.
Oh, yeah.
Or like my oldest son, like stands like my dad, you know, like he's like an intellectual, like my father, even how he talks, like it's just, it's weird.
You can really feel the ancestry there.
Yes. exactly. You feel the ancestry coming through. Mm. And it's like not until this moment when they're really becoming their own people.
Yes.
And formulating their own ideas, and you're seeing their style come forth as their own, but you are seeing the ancestry come through. That's a great way to put it.
Yeah. Oh, it's cool.
I love that. It's so cool.
Yeah. You know, something about you that I so admire is that you are such a successful entrepreneur. And when I think about you, I think, my gosh, like, cause you own not one business, but more than one, right?
Well, we have two studios.
Okay.
Two studios, right? So that's Groove Ride.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have the life coaching, which is the Electric Life, which I just started actually getting back up and running, this year.
Okay.
And because I had taken some time back from doing individual coaching and, you know, really just focusing more so on Pure Movement. And then I have Pure Movement, and Pure Movement is my sensual movement and personal development course.
Yeah.
And so, yes. And then there's these other endeavors that my husband and I want to do more so on the entrepreneur side. Mm-hmm. Now having been in business for 5 years and also having worked together, just giving creating more events and seminars for other entrepreneurs to hear us speak about it, or to share our ideas on company culture and the things that we've created in the studio, and mission statements and creating values and how to hire, and, you know, what we're looking for on, you know, when you set expectations in the studio, all these things that I've heard other business owners kind of struggle with, that aren't always readily available on Google, you know, or, you know, they don't want to read the book about it, or, you know, just things like that. But I think also just people like to hear from other entrepreneurs in the moment.
I think so too.
As opposed to like, oh, I'm going to read the book by this person who's done like this really big thing, but I want to hear from the person who's kind of like maybe just a little bit ahead of where I'm at.
Yeah.
You know, and how they've been doing it.
Well, I feel like it can feel so when you're being inspired. I mean, absolutely, that's inspiring to see like how far something can go.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're closer to the starting line and someone else feels like they're tremendously established, it can feel way far away. And so it makes sense to me that you would want to serve people in a different manner than that.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I think it's like, it's not necessarily that we're saying anything that you can't find somewhere else or that no one's ever said before. I got over the fact that there's a lot of coaches out there. I had to get over the fact that there's lots of entrepreneurs who want to do what we do.
Yes.
Or want to speak to what we want to speak to. Because what I've learned is that through coaching, I've learned this, is that how you say something just may resonate with someone a different way than the way somebody else does.
100%.
Because I can't tell you how many times where I've literally said something, you know, to a certain person, whatever I've been coaching. And then like, you could see it kind of land. And then like, they maybe heard it from somewhere else. And they were like, oh my God. And it was like light bulbs going. I'm like, no, but I've been saying that for two. Okay. I have to accept that. And then vice versa. Like, they'll come to me, I'll say something to them, and they're like, you know, I've heard this 100 times and it just actually hit me. Yes. What you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, and then so there's value in that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the way that we speak, you know, will land in certain ways for certain people. And there's also the element of when we are ready to hear something too, then it will sink in.
Right. Right. Exactly.
So it's almost like, you know, kismet for the right voice and the right moment of being able to flow with it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. That's so true. So then you just keep going.
Yeah.
You just continue to put out the good stuff that you want to put out and not worry about trying to make it like anybody else's or not worrying about it being like anybody else's or like everybody else's. You just do your thing and speak your truth.
Yep.
And there will be people who will be like, you know, I just like the way this person does it.
Totally.
And you just have to, my friend said this that was so neat, and I love this about entrepreneurship. I was in my shit one day about, you know, oh my gosh, there's just so many coaches. And like, you go on there and it's just an endless amount of coaches and we're all talking about the same thing. And she's like, girl, how many brands of bread are there in the supermarket? I'm like, a lot. And she's like, and all of them are making money. You really need to relax. Like, got it.
I mean, you know, I'm not a coach per se, but I have several friends who are coaches and many, what I love about the culture of it is that so many of them like, when they hear that someone else is joining the coaching profession, they're always like, oh yes, we need more coaches. Like, because there's a belief, the belief that I'm hearing is that like everybody needs a coach. And mm-hmm. so, you know, it's nice that there's actually an embracing of, oh yes, let's all do this together.
Yeah. And us coaches need coaches. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Honestly. And you can't service everyone, right? That's the other thing. Like, you just can't. But more so, it's just that there's just more than enough room. There's just more than enough room. And I think if anybody feels like it's not working for them, then I really beg to, you know, just do your thing and not, like, what are you measuring your success by too? That's the other thing. Mm-hmm. Like, are you worried about how many followers you have, or focused that the five that you have are actually truly engaged with what you're saying?
That's right. Yeah.
Right. Cause I'd much rather have high engagement of people actually listening and talking, but they may have less of a following.
Right.
You know,
yep.
I maybe have 10 people watching, you know, my podcast, or maybe 10 people might want to take my seminar. Mm-hmm. But if those 10 people are like wholeheartedly like in it, then I've succeeded. If they're getting something out of it, if they walk away and they're like, wow, that shit was amazing, then I succeeded, as opposed to like always looking at whether or not you sold it out.
Right. And that's mm-hmm. actually a hurdle I had to get over with this podcast. And I had a conversation with my brother, because this is really a creative endeavor for me. And I had this, you know, he knew it was important to me. He kept going, how's it going? And I was like, oh, you know, and I was half committed. And he finally said, what's the actual obstacle? And I finally said, what if no one listens? And he goes, what if no one does? And then he just stopped talking. And I was like, good point. Maybe it doesn't matter. And that just that moment actually helped me just go, okay, yeah, you're right. Like, maybe no one will listen, and I will have tried it and I will have done it, and then I'll move on to something else, you know?
Right. As opposed to us not doing it at all, right? And then always, I hate the shoulda, woulda, couldas.
Mm-hmm.
I always say, I don't want to be 90 years old going, I did so much, but I always wish I'd done this, or yep. I really wish I'd done that. Like, I think that's the worst feeling in the world I could possibly have.
Yep.
In my old age, is looking back and going, I wish I had.
Yes.
You know, I'd rather say I did it and it was a fucking bomb.
Yeah, it's a disaster.
You know what I mean? And here's what I learned, though. And then from that, I actually grew.
Yep.
And it was kind of a really neat experience because I met this person because of it. That's so much of a cooler story than go, I was afraid.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I didn't do it.
Yeah. So because you work with your husband, and, mm-hmm. you know, you've got all these things going on. What, like, how do you manage the dance between family and work and all the things that
you know, some days you are like on point and some days it's fucking oops.
Yeah.
Forgot to pick up the kids, or what the hell are we having for dinner?
It's a big one.
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Some days it just works because you know, you did your due diligence and you looked at your calendar ahead of time and you planned it out well. And then other times you just forget. And
yeah.
I think it's like the importance is one of the days you forget is just having grace for mm-hmm. yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, having some empathy for yourself, or, you know, your spouse who's doing their best as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for your children who... they're only kids. They can't expect them to remember that they always have homework, or they are supposed to turn in their project. Like, you know, just breathing through it. And it's hard. And if you do lose your shit again, because you will.
Yeah.
It's okay. You know, we doesn't mean the end of the world, and we don't have to sit there and berate ourselves for hours about it. Apologize, own your shit.
Yes.
Tell your kids you're sorry you screamed and you could have handled it better. Doesn't change the fact that you're mad at them, but you could have handled it better.
Right.
And, you know, and just move on.
Yeah.
What else can you do?
I feel like motherhood takes so much self-compassion. I say this a lot to other moms, like, just be easy with yourself. And I have to say it inward too, because I just get so mean to myself about, you know, the days that it doesn't flow the way I would like it to be doing.
Hopefully. Especially when you've got like your kids are like bummed because they didn't get to do something, because it was like you didn't remember you had the meeting and now they can't go to the thing and they're mad at you about mm-hmm. it. And you're like, oh my God, now they're going to end up on a therapist couch because I effed that up. And it's like, you know what? They're going to end up on that fucking
anyway.
Couch either way.
Mm-hmm.
So just start putting that little jar aside, save that money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
and just find him a good one, right, and you'll be fine. It's going to be okay. Like, doing the best you can. If you can honestly say, I am doing the very best I can, and sometimes that looks like something's going to drop, mm-hmm, but something else will steady and win. And that's what it is. Like, the whole idea, like the whole balance thing, you know, like I remember the day I finally realized, oh my God. So it's not a scale, because that's impossible.
Right.
It can't be a scale. It's a day-to-day thing. And sometimes the shit is great. And sometimes you got to take something out of this part and put a little bit more on this side, mm-hmm, in order for it to work.
Yep. I feel like we could just talk for like 3 hours. And I would love doing that. I love the perspective that you bring, and you have so much energy around just letting sort of, I hope this doesn't come across badly, but like, you really allow there to be mess. And I really admire that, because I struggle with that sometimes, of like, I have to keep it all together, and I'm a mom now, and it has to be so responsible. And yeah, we do. And sometimes it's a mess. And I love that you just, you really allow that. It's kind of beautiful to see that.
It took time to get there. I definitely wasn't there in the beginning. I definitely looked, mm-hmm, at other moms and was like, how does she do that? How does she have, mm-hmm, time to teach him to ride a bike and casually walk down the street with her coffee cup just so? And I was like, that's, yeah, amazing. And she's holding on
and
to the back
of his seat.
And then
take a picture.
Yeah. And then take a, you know, I was like, how does she do that? And then, like, you know, it took another mom going, well, yeah, but there's like Chardonnay in that cup, girl. She's getting through it. I was like, shut the fuck up, really? And she's like, yeah, girl. I was like, oh, okay. It just put things in perspective to stop, yeah, assuming and creating stories based on what I'm seeing and assuming about that person, just because they're not letting you see the mess, because, yes, they're tucking it in and it's in a cup. You know, yeah, what I mean? It's, you know, it just really helped me. That helped me just put things into perspective, because it's like, oh, okay, yeah, I'm not the only one who wants to have a drink in the middle of the day because I'm pulling my hair out. You know, and I'm not the only one who forgot her kids and their friends at the school on the day she was supposed to do pickup. And now she's, right, running through the streets with her infant bouncing up and down in her arms.
Right.
When you hear other moms go, oh, I do it all the time. Or like, you know, it's just like, Allie, I would beat myself up because I sent my kid to school, I remember this, with a raw egg I forgot to boil.
Oh.
Right? He's supposed to get, yeah, a hard boiled egg, and I forgot to boil it. So when he cracked, yeah, it open, it just spilled everywhere. Oh, no. And then he had to like save it, because he wanted to show me and let me know. And then it was one of those type of things. So I'm like, of course, you know, you if you don't find compassion when you, yeah, are that mom, and I get it, there are some moms that do have it together like that. There are some moms.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not because they're a better mom. It's because maybe organization was their jam to begin with.
Totally. You know what I mean? It's like, we all have our strengths, you
That's
know?
What I'm saying. And my strength has never been to be hyper organized. My strength has always just been to be fun and in the moment and compassionate and relatable, and that I do that, yeah, shit really well.
Yeah.
You know, I do it, yeah, really well. But if you ask me to try to juggle multiple things, that is not my strength. So instead of me thinking that it's because she's a better mom, it's like, no, maybe that's just her jam.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it, actually.
Yeah. Maybe she needs to learn how to be more fun.
Right.
Then maybe fun's not her jam. Do you,
yeah,
know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's what she's, yeah, looking at me going, damn, I wish she was fun. And that's the other part, remembering that other people are looking at you and they think that you have it all together, Allie.
Right.
That was the other part where I was like, oh, shoot.
Yeah.
When you'd hear those moms go, God, I wish I could do it. Like, you're like, do what? Did you see what I did?
I know. Oh, yeah. 100%.
I forgot to feed, yeah, this child.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Perspective.
Yeah, it's true.
Perspective. Total.
So I'm curious, you know, because you said you're just reigniting, mm-hmm, the flame of your coaching business, which you call the Electric Life.
Yeah.
And I want to know how you define electric life.
Yeah. I think an electric life has absolutely nothing to do with being consistently happy. It has absolutely nothing to do with everything going right and being perfect. An electric, yeah, life means that you are embracing everything as it comes to the best of your ability. It means that you are working towards your purpose or living your purpose. And that doesn't mean that you've quit your day job to do it. you may have the 9 to 5 still, but you understand and you can utilize that 9 to 5 to elevate you in the things that are your purpose. You know what I'm saying? That you are finding that perspective. To me, it means that you don't always get it right, but you now have the tools or you understand what it takes to have the compassion in those moments when you don't get it right, what to do with yourself, how to clean up the mess and not just stay stuck in your feelings, how to not relive the moment over and over again and unpack and live there. You know,
right.
It's understanding.
Which is so easy to do if you're not careful.
100%. You know, we're like, I think it was like the Four Agreements. There's somewhere in the book that he says that we're the only animal on earth that replays something over and over and over and over again. Like, you know, mama raccoon and daddy raccoon cross the river and one gets lost in the river. He's upset about it maybe for a second, but then he moves on and life doesn't replay it. Like, I should have done this. And if we had crossed down there and if only we had left at 2 instead of 3, maybe this would have happened. They don't. They move on, right? And we just replay and replay and replay. And of course, there's emotion attached to it. And that's why. And we have a different level of emotion in that sense than like the animals. But it still doesn't mean that we need to be replaying a situation that is done already unless you're going to learn from it and move on from it. So to me, you know, it's about being content versus happy. Happy is a momentary feeling. Happy can happen because of a lot of things, but happy isn't something that is realistic to be contained, maintaining, because, you know, people are going to die. You're going to get sick. Mm-hmm, the people around you may get sick. You may not get the promotion. You may only have 5 people listen to your podcast, whatever it is, right? But you have to find where the contentment is in all of that, though, which is that I'm still doing what I love, or, you know, that I've had this time with that person, even though they're no longer with me. And again, it's just perspective. And maybe that's a glass is half full kind of perspective, but I just choose to look for solutions versus problems. I choose to have grace most of all when I'm not getting it right, which is often. And that even in my best knowledge of my coaching, that sometimes my coach hat is nowhere to be found. And being okay with the fact that I slipped that day, or that I just allowed myself that moment to have a tantrum. And now, okay, let's get back to our regular scheduled program, you know,
because
we don't have time for that shit. So,
yeah. And speaking of that, you know, how do you self-nurture? Do you have a consistent practice, or is it always changing? Like, how do you nurture in?
It's not consistent. My life is too all over the place right now. I've tried so many times to have like, oh, every Monday I do this. And then I just find that I frustrate myself and then get disappointed that I can't adhere to it. So instead, I just allow myself to just when there's time and I know I really need it, I'm going to make the time to do it. For instance, yesterday I had 1,000,001 reasons not to go to a friend's yoga class. And it was like, I could do this and I could do that. And I should be posting to Poshmark and I need to get rid of these clothes off my floor. And I got to clean the house and I could use this time to go do 900 emails about this, that, and the other. And I'm like, no, but you really want to go to this. So you're going to go to this and you're going to go with it and release yourself from any guilt about all the other things you could be doing. Or the fact that the bed's not going to be made and that, you know, he's going to come home tonight after a long day and things are still going to look the same as they did on Friday. I'm like, it's going to be okay. And so I went and it was amazing and it was wonderful and it was exactly what I needed. And I released myself from any guilt when I came home that things were crazy looking and I knew I'd get to it. And that's tough. I know it's tough because we want to do it all. We want to do it all at once. But I think doing things like that, I think it's important for people to find what works for them and not just what people are telling them. Like, if you don't like to take a bath, then that does not mean you're not doing self-care if you're not bathing.
Totally.
You know what I mean? Like,
I think self-care is so personal.
It's 100%. You got to investigate what works for you. But the point is it's a moment of nurturing. And that could simply mean that you're lingering a little longer when you're putting your lotion on and you're being more conscious of how it feels on your skin. That's self-care. Mm-hmm. You know, paying attention, getting rid of your old underwear and getting you some new underwear. It don't have to be fancy. Just get some nice cotton things that feel good on your butt. And that's just self-care. You know what I mean?
Totally. Totally.
It could be something that simple, or finding the time to clear out the closet because it will feel better once you get rid of that old stuff. That can be self-care. It's not always a manicure. It's not always a glass of wine. It's whatever you need. Mm-hmm. Whatever you need.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. If you could offer one morsel of, I'm going to call it motivation, but you can interpret that word any way you want, two moms, what would you say?
Release yourself from any expectation of how it's supposed to look or go, because it's not going to happen that way.
Yeah.
I don't care what you eat. Right. I don't care if you eat shit and sleep quinoa, your kids are going to want that processed shit sometimes. It's just what's going to happen. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
Release yourself from the expectation. I think it'll make it a lot lighter and easier, and just kind of see what happens a little bit. You know, you can have some structure in there for sure. You need that. But if you think it's going to be exactly as you imagined it as a kid, just stop that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good. So the last thing before we end is I wanted to read something back to you that you actually wrote on Instagram and just have you maybe say a little more about it. So this is what I read. You said, "Once we heal from the sleepless nights, stank formula smell, and sore nipples, we can begin that journey back to our whole selves. Motherhood is a beautiful miracle we have the honor of being the vessel for. So if anything, it should signal, it should be the birth of you as the whole woman."
Mm.
And what is one thing that if a woman is feeling really lost or like disconnected from herself, that she can do in that first step back to feeling like the whole woman?
Yeah. I really think it has, for me, the body, because it's the first thing I think we disconnect from, right? Yep. It goes through this tremendous transformation from the 9 months prior to the birth to what now happens after, and, you know, and the sore nipples and all the things that you may be experiencing, all these things where sometimes it feels like your body is working against you, or you are holding on to the notions of what your body was. So I feel like us starting with our body and our womb energy and our feminine energy and connecting to that and being soft and kind and gentle in that exploration again, you know, even before you let your lover come back to you in that sense, it's really just, can you find time for yourself first and get to know her again as this new beautiful body, right?
Yes.
Because that's what I think it is. I think we're like looking at ourselves and like, I don't know who that is. So it's like, okay, well then we're going to have to get reintroduced, you know, get reintroduced. And I think starting with the physical and the sensations and providing ourselves the self-care and the nurturing and the gentleness is where it can begin. And then you will start to, I think, reconnect with yourself in that new way. It's like your new normal, right?
Yeah.
Your new normal and making peace with that. And then, and it's like, I always say this, I'm not shaming any moms that want to like get back their body or, you know, or they're trying to like go into the gym and they want to exercise and they want to, I just always ask that people really are mindful of where it's coming from though, the desire to do so, the energy behind it, you know, and understanding that if it's like, I love who I am and I respect and I honor what my body went through or has been through and has now created. And I am ready now to, you know, feed my body and work her and get her into a place that I, you know, I want to guide her to. It's just language. Language is important to me, how we speak to ourselves, how we think about things. And it may seem like you're saying the same thing, but I think it makes a difference how you say it and your intention behind it. You know, if it's like, I hate this body and I'm ashamed of this body and I don't care that this body just birthed this other human being and went through this miraculous thing, I want to cut it and chop it. And that those are just so hard and negative. And I think that's hard to maintain that for yourself. And you know, and where's the respect for what your body has done? Where's that, you know? So I just think let's acknowledge ourselves. Let's applaud ourselves. Let's celebrate ourselves and then, recreate this new relationship. And I think that's what it means. So the whole woman to me is prior to you, you know, I think what women sometimes feel after motherhood is they've lost a part of themselves, you know, or that that part is gone or that they don't know where it went. Or they never, you know what I mean? Or they never even got there. And it's like, okay, well now you've experienced that. Now it's time. Let's explore every aspect of who she is, from her purpose to her passions, to her desires, to her feelings. Every single aspect of you now lives in like full color.
Yeah. And that's what you explore in your pure movement mm-hmm. immersions, mm-hmm. right?
Exactly.
And so, you know, I just want to say, because, you know, even though I haven't seen you in 10 years, I do know you as a teacher mm-hmm. and a guide of women. And if anybody listening, you know, wants to go on a journey like that, I think they should come find you. Like, I think it would be worth it to even fly wherever you are, like in Cleveland, and seek you out, because I think you have tremendous wisdom. You come about things in such an honest way. And so I'm going to, you know, make sure people can find you, because, or they should bring you to wherever they are, right?
Yes. I have one coming up in January here in Cleveland at the end of January. I think January 24th is the weekend, but I plan to be coming to Los Angeles in the springtime, and I am possibly going to be doing a 1-day immersion in LA. So I definitely will let people know if that happens, but I would love to see people there.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I know we spent a little extra time, but it was so worth it. And I appreciate you, and let's just keep in touch.
Thank you so much. I love you too. I'm so happy to see you and talk to you. This is wonderful.
Thanks for listening to Being Mom. If you're enjoying the show, don't forget to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts so that you never miss an episode. And for more information about this episode, go to beingmompodcast.com to find photos of Anjua and the link to her website. I hope you find plenty of joy this week, and I'll look forward to sharing next week's conversation with a mom who radiates a sweet depth of spirit. Until next time, bye.
Excuse me one second. What's up? You ate lunch? What did you eat? Two pieces of bacon. Okay. Okay, go eat your after lunch treat. He's taking advantage of this. I'm not going to argue right now about two pieces of bacon being lunch, but we're going to let it go.
Right. There's a little protein there.
Anyway.